Today on The Sports Influence, we've got Jake Raine. Jake started his football career at Stoke City in the academy system for 7 years. He then made the wise decision to pursue both education and football at Repton School, scoring 83 goals in 83 appearances and becoming Repton's all-time highest goal scorer. But he wasn't done. Jake crossed the Atlantic to Furman University in South Carolina, where he made an immediate impact, earning Freshman of the Year and putting together multiple successful seasons in the US college system. Now he's left the game behind, but not the mindset. Today, Jake's killing it in the recruiting world in London, applying the same competitive edge to business. Let's get into it.
Do you have to pass that then?
Yeah, we'll just pass it.
I fucking love it, it's my fault.
Right then, Jake. So, Furman Soccer, you went there from school to play football.
Yep.
Tell me how that was and like, your experience, what you studied.
Yeah, so obviously was at Repton with yourself and knew I was playing at Stoke Academy since I was 7, 8 years old. And then actually one of our friends called George Kirtland. He was on trial at Stoke for a short while and his parents became friendly with mine. And they said, have you ever thought about going to private school before? And I was just at a normal school, like my parents had not even thought about it. And then they were like, well, we could have looked at it. And then George, unfortunately, didn't get into Stoke. Then they stayed in contact. So then I went to, there's like a feeder school to Repton called Formark. I went there for a little bit of like a trial day. They offered me a scholarship to go there. I was like, I'm not boarding at, what would it have been, 10, 11, 12. And my parents were like, no way as well. So I ended up moving to a small school in Staffordshire that then fed into Repton, because you had to do a thing back in that day called common entrance and stuff like that to get into Repton. Okay. So I did that, went to Repton, and then I was balancing doing Stoke and Repton. Mum, bless her, was coming to pick me up, take me back to Stoke, and that's like in an hour, once, twice a week, I was having to do day release. And then it was starting to get a little bit much when GCSE started to really kick in, and Stoke were like, look, we need more time for you. I was playing for the school as well because I had a scholarship, and I was just like, I'm going to have to pick one here. And Stoke were like really, really keen. I went into Stoke and I was like, I'm leaving. I love Repton. They were just baffled. They'd never heard anyone say something like that. They were like, what? And I was like, I'm staying at Repton. I want to pursue playing at Repton and then go to America. And so I can still get my education whilst playing sport to a high level. Whereas the academy system in the UK is fucked in the sense of it's literally, you're putting all your eggs in the sports basket. Or you're literally doing, you know.
It's like for broke, isn't it?
It's
like,
mate, it's literally just gambling.
You go all the way down that route, or like what you did was quite wise in that you're like hedging your bets and you're like, you still want to do the sport, but you've also got a career outside of sport if you don't.
100%, 100%.
But if you're going to the academy, it's either you make pro.
So I know so many of the lads that I was with from, age 7 or 8, and a lot of them got their first pro, got their scholarships to 18 and then got pro contracts. And then now are just like scaffolders, builders, bless them. And they put everything into that. Literally, we're not at school. And like, part of you does think if you had stayed, could you have done it? But I honestly don't think I was good enough to do that. And I'm very, very open about that. But they just didn't have a choice to do that. You've got like the odd university, I'd say, in the UK that Loughborough is probably the best example of that. And then apart from that, there's not many where I think, particularly on football as a sport, there's not many where you can do both, whereas the US have just cracked it. And that's why there's so many lads and girls going over there to be able to pursue football, soccer, whatever they call it. Yeah.
Yeah, so you spoke a bit about like your mum like getting you to train and all that. We spoke on a couple of the past podcasts about how important that support is when you and you think you could get to the level where you got to without that support from your parents, because obviously some people don't have that support. So how crucial do you think that was?
Mate, massive. And bless mum, Max was doing the exact same, my brother. So he's 2 years below. He was at Stoke with me and then he moved to Burton as well. So she was balancing me at Stoke, him at Burton. Dad did as much as he can at weekends, but was working all in the week. So she was doing all of that. It would have been impossible without her, like absolutely impossible. And she opened those doors to like Repton and stuff. Obviously, like we got the scholarship to go there and all of that, but we wouldn't have even explored that type of thing if it wasn't for her. So Max and I owe her everything for that.
Yeah, so obviously some people, like private school is one of those things that's like some people are completely against it. Some people, I mean, I got the opportunity through swimming, like to have a scholarship and go there. But how important do you think the facilities were to you, and also, you know, do you think it helped you become the footballer that you are, and you couldn't do that potentially at Stoke? Do you know?
Mate, the facilities obviously at the academies nowadays that are still obscenely unbelievable, but the facilities we had at Repton for a school, if you think about it, it's a school, like, it doesn't even classify as amateur. It is amateur, do you know what I mean? The school, the facilities we had were unbelievable. The pitches were class, the training we had, the S&C that when they got their new building, just everything was brilliant. So it was like, people don't quite understand that have not been in the private school way of thinking. They just think people are very, very lucky and fortunate, rich, all this type of thing, and just jump to conclusions. But we know a lot of people that got the opportunity with bursaries and stuff. And one of my best friends, Ollie, he got scouted from Staffordshire. He was just playing for that county side, and the football coach at the time, Mr. Carrington, just gave him a scholarship, a bursary to come to Repton to give someone like him an opportunity. And then he realised that it's not just full of a load of posh lads that, you know what I mean? You actually have, you know, all different types of people. I think Repton was very, very good for that. There were so many different types of people there.
Yeah, because Shay and I went to similar schools before, and it was almost like we played Repton quite a few times, yeah, like football and stuff before, you know, there were some like big names that played for our school, like Keon Atete, and we played over at Repton, and it was literally like, almost to us, it was like a different world. It was like, right, what's going on here, you know, like Hogwarts style. But then when you actually go there, you realise everyone is just normal people. Like, they didn't have a choice necessarily to go there. Like, your parents just send you there, and it's just like the same class. Like, you're still lads messing up, you know, there's still the odd lad messing about. It's exactly the same. But obviously, what I found was sometimes the only difference is that some people that have been sent there without their choice, you know, parents have just thrown the money at it.
Yeah.
Sometimes they just don't want to like work hard in the class.
And they don't appreciate it because they think it is just the absolute norm. But when I was doing it whilst I was playing at Stoke, like those lads at Stoke, that a lot of them, best of them, just come from nothing. They just hated that I was at that school, and they couldn't understand like me wanting to just be at that school and not, because I was enjoying my football so much more there. Like, yeah, there's pressure at reps and stuff, but it's not. I was playing with my friends. It's still a very, very good standard. Everyone's still very, very focused, but then you also have the enjoyment of a bit more freedom, whereas the academy system is just ruthless. Like, from 12, 13, like, they are teaching you to play like a pro. They are literally, everything about it is just so structured, and you almost lose a little bit of that creativity and the enjoyment of just playing footy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, from how young do they start scouting people football? Like, for you, example, or kind of like the youngest person
Started playing football when I was like 4 or 5 at some like local Sunday league team, and then by 6 or 7 I had played at Villa for 6 months. I'd been on trial at United, and I had been on trial at Stoke, so I did those 3 clubs. So I was 6 or 7, and they were all because like there was a scout on the game on Sunday and just like, do you want your lad to come and train? And obviously my parents were like, yeah, let's do it. So like, honestly, it's like that young. I don't think you can officially sign a contract till, I think it's when you turn 9. Like, that's the actual thing. But you're signing a contract at 9 years old. Like, yes. Do you know how mental it is? Obviously, there's no financials involved or something. But
surely it's your parents signing the contract as well.
You sign it with them. They have to sign with you, yeah. But you sign with them. They both sign. And from 9, then you are just only attached to that club. Like, you actually can't play for another club unless they're bored.
Do you get paid?
No. Just have the contract is just essentially you saying, yeah, I will sign with this club and I'm only going to play with this club. And the contract's usually 2 years. Mm. And then, for example, there was a lad that was the year below me. His name's Lewis Dobbin. You'll see him now. Yeah. He plays for Everton, plays in the Championship. He got signed by Everton, I believe, for 48-50k at 11. So they made that investment at 11.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if they sold him now. We can look at it afterwards, but he must be worth, I'd say, probably 3 or 4 mil now.
Yeah.
So, like, they made that investment then. There must be loads of them that
could the ROI through. On
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. So, all they need, they used to say it in the academy, all they need is one to make it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then maybe a big one, and you get that £10 million payout or something in the club. And then that funds the academy again for the next, you know, 5 or so years.
Yeah.
So, it's a big
investment.
Crazy.
You know, That kind of reminds me of like Haaland and Leeds. Like if Haaland would have stayed at Leeds, it would have been different money for Leeds, and they'll probably be well up in the Premier League. Well, I think they'll do well in the Premier League this season. But yeah, it's like one of those. But you talked a bit about kind of the sport and where that's got you now. Do you think, but the private school element, do you think that, because there's a lot of like, it's all over the place at the moment in recruitment, which you're in now.
Yeah.
Do you think some people look kind of badly that you went to private school at all?
So I am very fortunate in the sense of recruitment has a huge stigma, particularly in the UK. I do nothing to do with the UK, I'm only in the US. In the US, right, it's a very, very reputable and well thought of industry. So if you're in executive search and you do that in the US, it's like, that's really, really like looked up.
Yeah, not looked down on.
So I'm dealing with those types of people every day. So it's just like, all I deal with is the US now. Like, I don't deal with anyone in the UK apart from a few of my clients that have UK offices here, but they're clearly in it and working it, so it's absolutely fine. But that's not looked down on one bit, and the US don't, a lot of the people in the US go to private schools as well. All the things we kind of, in the US, your height and the main thing you've got to do is go to university, have the best 4 years of your life, then work very, very hard to send your kids to university. That is the US ecosystem, like, of what I learned massively. Like, you meet someone for the first time in the US, what university did you go? It's like the first question.
Right,
I don't feel like in the UK we would ask that, would we? Like, I wouldn't say like, what uni did you get? Whereas in the US, that is like...
Well, some people ask that. For example, I was at Nat Schools. Do you know what Nat is? Like, National Schools Regatta. It's basically the rowing event.
Yeah.
For all of the junior schools, basically, that go there and race each other. And St. Andrews had a stall there, right?
Yeah.
And this proper posh guy came up to me. He goes, there were three of us there. And he goes, so what school did you go to? Yeah. And I was like, you wouldn't know it. It's just a random public school in Derby. And he just walked off. he's not sending his kid to St. Andrews.
Yeah,
but like the wrong, it's basically the kind of people you don't want to be associated with that ask that question, if you get what I mean. So it's a good sign that you haven't heard anyone ask that question.
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah, you obviously went to Furman. Why did you pick Furman? Because I know a couple of the other lads, like Tommy, went to Furman.
Yeah.
What was it? Obviously, it must be a good football school.
So I was then playing for ISFA, the England like schools for private schools. And then there's like a couple of international games we play, and every year probably 15, 20 coaches come over and watch.
All right, okay.
Watch us play that. It's in December at St. George's Park. So obviously we've already sent I know I want to go to the US. I've sent a load of clips out, having a few conversations with different coaches, but then just a bit different. I didn't expect much from it, but that in-person element of a coach actually coming. So Doug, my coach at Furman, flew across, watched me play, and he was like, yeah, I would love for you to come to Furman. Obviously, he's seen my clips as well, now seen me play live, and he was just like, yeah, we can sort this out. Had to do all the stuff with the academic side of things, do the SATs exam and all of that. And then we just worked it out, and Tandy was there. So Luke Tandy was already there. He's former from Repton himself. And there was a boy a couple of years above him called Lawrence Wyke that's now pro in the US, playing the MLS and still out there now playing, I think, Tampa Bay Rowdies. But they had both been to Furman as well. So there was a little bit of like a few people from Repton. And then I thought I was going to go. And then I decided to go to that. And then Tommy, my best mate now, he went to Fairfield University, tore both meniscuses in pre-season, came back, and then decided to transfer, just wanted to start again. And he heard I was going to Furman. Obviously, Luke was there. So then he decided to go as well. So we went together, which was really, really nice and just a complete and utter coincidence. So, and then they've got a very, very strong history in football. Obviously you boys know Clint Dempsey, like, it's probably the most famous footballer that's ever come out of the US. So he went to Furman. So they've got that history, and I was just like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, why not? Because the US system tends to, like, the facility, like we spoke about facilities before.
Yeah.
I went and visited a uni over there, and it's just different money, but the money you pump into it, it's almost like, is it like, a bit under the table handshakes, you know what I mean? Like, you pay for a library, whatever, and your kid can go there, you know. Did you see any of that?
I didn't see any of it, but I know exactly what you mean. I've seen some of these documentaries and shit, and it's like there's some stuff going on there. But I think particularly with these like smaller private schools, we were a smaller private school, there's like, I think like 2,500-3,000 students, so not big at all. But there's like these buildings popping up and they're named after someone. Do you know what I mean? And you're like, who's that person? They donated it.
Yeah, the money flying around the US is different gravy. Like, the salary that I'm on here is just like double, triple out there.
Oh.
And it's the same for every different job, you know. And then you have so much money to pump into your kid and sports and things like that. But the debt, I suppose they don't have the same, like, you're not paying your 9.25k, whatever, to go to uni in the UK. It's a completely different gravy, isn't it? Like, mate, 30, 40.
Oh, at Furman, it was, I think at the time, 68 grand a year. My university.
Were you on scholarship
though? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, nice. I wouldn't, like, that's
how you can't. Yeah.
That's 68 like, grand a year.
It's just normalised there, though, isn't it?
Like, oh, mate.
100k. Are there some that are like 90, 100k?
I think the Ivy Leagues
are like up there.
Mate, I was literally on a phone to one of my clients this week, and he's moving his son into uni, I think, this coming week. And he's like, look, I've got to work for the next 5 or 6 years. I'm paying 100 grand a year. And I'm just thinking, obviously I know he earns a lot of money, but that's still a lot of money. Do you know what I mean? 100 grand a year for university. So like, when I say like, that's why I really, really enjoy working in the US market now, because they get it, because all they care about is once you've been uni and had the experience, been to college, whatever they call it, sending your kids to college, and that's the success. Do you know what I mean? So him doing that, he's getting joy, even though it's going to be 100 grand a year, and he's probably going to be, it's a lot of money, but he's so happy his son is going to be going to that school to be able to play lacrosse, which he does, and he's playing 100 grand.
Yeah, that's mint. Yeah. That's really good. So I kind of want to go back to football at a younger age a bit. So in terms of technique and learning to play when you're younger, is there kind of a window where coaches are like, if you're not at this standard by this age, you're not going to grow much after that? Because I've seen, I think it was a video of Arsene Wenger at some point, where he's talking about like, if you don't have the right technique by the time you're like 12 or 13, you're not going to get it or something like
that. I think 12 or 13, maybe 14 is a real key age, because like some lads are starting to get a lot bigger than others, and or there's someone that's maybe been a bit bigger than others, and then people are starting to even out, because the ones that are a bit slower to puberty and stuff in like 14, 15, and then starting to catch up. So like there's a big drop off point, I would say, in 12, and then probably around 15, 16, as some people have maybe been flat track bullies and just been a bit bigger for a few years, and then everyone started to catch them up, and it's just like, he's not that good now. He was just stronger and quicker than the lads that hadn't hit puberty. Do you know what I mean? So that definitely happens, and it is a technique point, I would say, and it is so, so cutthroat. To be able to just say someone at 12 or 13, you're not good enough, and that's it. So the amount of lads that have done that, but then there's lads that come back from it. Do you know what I mean? They don't get it always right.
Yeah, and I think football is one of those tricky sports as well, where like, for example, rowing. If you stick at rowing for years and years and try really hard, you're going to get good, and you're going to end up quite good. Like there are some,
the same movement.
Yeah, there are some rowers that make the Olympics when they're like 30, just because they've been persistent all the way through.
And just grafted.
Whereas football, you can just you can just be born with it, born rapid, and you're just like, there are people that don't even have to try, but they're so sick.
Have you heard about a thing called the skill gap? So like the skill gap, I think a good example of that is like hockey. Yeah. So if you just looked at like the baseline person in the UK, Joel does it for us. You could jump on a football pitch and like a lot of people can just play football. Do you know what I mean? And do a bit. And most people could get on a pitch and just be able to help the team out in some way. I physically couldn't really get on a hockey pitch and even do anything. Do you get one? Because there's not as many people that play football, play hockey. So the exposure to the sport, everyone's played a game of football in their life. Not everyone's played a game of hockey. So like, if I just worked hard at hockey, I would say for, you know, 3 or 4 years, I reckon I could get to a decent level, which is way above if I worked hard at football for 2 or 3 years. Do you get what I'm saying? Because the skill gap of like, people, and I know so many lads that are still playing and getting paid to play football, but they're not at that next level. But the difference between those two is like minimal. Whereas at like the hockey or a sport that's a little bit more niche, rowing I think is a great example. If you just grind it, because there's not as many people doing it, and the skill gap is not as, you know, small, just to kind of get a small margin. I think that is like with football, it's just a joke, because like you've got all these leagues now that, and everyone's pretty much the same level. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you just have to be a tiny bit better to be able to go to that next league.
Yeah.
So you obviously learned great skills at Furman, at Repton, at Stoke.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about those skills that you picked up and how you're now using these. Because obviously we're all working in the city, all three of us. Talk about a bit about your role and what skills you learn there, and where your motivations now lie, because we spoke a little bit about this before.
Yeah.
But tell us a bit about that.
So I think stemming from sport and what the academy system in the UK actually gives you real, real good exposure to is like from like 9 or 10, you are accountable to make sure that your mum gets you there on time. Otherwise you're not starting and the coach would drop you. So I've always had that, you know, timekeeping accountability just driven into me since I was 9 or 10. So I just won't be late for anything. I hate being late for anything that's important. I'll make sure I'm on time. And then the discipline in the sense of consistency, always wanting to train, always wanting to be better and being part of a team environment. Like that's just what's been driven through me through sport and through having so many, playing through so many different teams. And that's including Repton to an extent. Not as much so as the academy gives you, it's a bit more ruthless and you have to like look after yourself a bit more so that you, because you're all essentially competing there, whereas at school you're a bit more not competing. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? Whereas academy, at the end of the day, there's going to be two or three of you that make it. You're all teammates, you love each other, but it's just like there's a little bit of that. And then in Furman, it's a nice balance, I say, in US of both of them, but you've got to be up for training. You cannot be late for gym at, you know, 6 in the morning. You're up at 5 with your mate. You're making sure your mate's up as well. We're doing that together. So like that stuff is now being drilled into me. And honestly, it's mental. I find work so much easier than university. Like going to the gym at 5:45 in the morning, then going to do 2-3 lectures, having to maybe do an essay in the evening. I've got training at 3 p.m. and then I've maybe got a game the next day. There's so much shit you're juggling. Like now with work, all I have to juggle, I play football once a week now because of how much work I do. And then I'm literally, I work as hard as I can in the week. And that's all I'm focused on. Do you know what I mean? Whereas at uni, I was juggling all this. So I think it's given me the ability, whereas I actually find it way more comfortable than the university. It can't get much harder than that. You're playing sport to the highest level possible in America from a college system whilst trying to get the best kind of degree that you can and managing all of that. If you're just focused now on work, I think it's a lot easier and you can be successful in that. So
it's like tunnel vision now. You've got you've got that thing to focus on and you put all your effort into that. You're not juggling different stuff that you potentially don't care about.
Exactly that.
You can go to the gym. You can you can do what you want to progress and whatever. But you obviously, because you're working with American, it's the American side of the firm.
Yeah.
Or I don't know if your firm completely focuses on America, but is it a different times, like in the UK, are you starting working at Gator? And
so we solely focus on the US and our hours are 10 till 7. But like, I don't know how much you know about recruitment and
Is it commission?
Yeah.
Commission based.
Yeah.
So
like you do what you want. Do you know what I mean? I'm on my phone, I'd say particularly Monday to Thursday till 10, 11 at night.
Yeah.
Like I taking some calls like Sharks and Carl's, like, I'll come back and I'll go straight on a call back at home at 8, 9 o'clock at night. I usually get in at like 9:20, 9:30 as well beforehand. And then I just grind throughout the day. Like I sit at my desk and eat lunch. Like, I'm not going out, I'm at work.
Yeah.
That's what I'm just very much for that way. I see people just dossing about and stuff. I'm not going to do a role like that if I'm not going to get rewarded and get paid a shit ton of money. Like fuck that, do you know what I mean? So that's why I did that. I did internships in wealth management whilst I was at uni, sounded sexy, do exams and all of that, and I was just like, I'm not sitting on 25-30k until I get exams for 3 or 4 years. I want to earn as much money as possible, and if I'm not earning that money, I want it to be my fault. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to have to. So in somewhere like this where it's literally, I get every single time I get promoted, I know exactly what I've got to do next to be promoted, and now's the first time that it's relied on someone else because I've hired from my own team. So like there's a little bit about that. It's like, I've got to get them up and running, which is accountable to myself, but they've got to be doing it themselves as well. So then, but mate, I love it. I love that it's all on me and I'll just work shit as hard as possible to earn as much money.
Yeah, because we spoke, David Hong was on the last podcast, go and watch that. It's GB badminton player, and he was talking about how he did it. He started in recruitment and he found that the sports side of things really transferred into that commission work, because it's like almost competitive. How much money can you make?
So in your office, did you have like a leaderboard?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because David, I was speaking to David about this and he was like, it was just always trying to be at the top of the leaderboard, like every single time. I'm assuming yours was the same.
It is to the extent. So like our company's part of like a venture fund with like 9 other search firms. They're all based out in the US. So like we compete against each other to an extent, but then very, very different markets. Like some people do like quants and stuff as a business, and you don't really have a lot of volume with that. Do you know what I mean? You may do like 2 or 3 placements a year, but they're really, really fat. Like $250,000-$300,000 fees. Yeah. Like, whereas like we're a bit more volume based, but not as much as some other, that we've got a life sciences business out there that's in Indianapolis, and those guys are just churning shit all the time. So like we're like a blend in between, but like there is that leaderboard and there is everything. I like at the moment, and I always think about longer term, like at the end of the day, every week's back at zero. Every single year, you literally start again from like a numbers standpoint. And it's a little bit like sport. Do you know what I mean? You have a season and then it's just like now, pre-season, let's get going again. Yeah, do you know what I mean? January, we're off and everyone's just back on the same level. And I liked that, I still like now that there's people more senior than me in the business from like a role standpoint, a title standpoint, but I can outperform them and it's just clear as day and everyone can see who's performing the best because the numbers just attached to your head.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sick. That's very good.
Because I've seen, obviously, on LinkedIn things, you've had quite a few promotions and stuff. So,
yeah. And
No, so having that commission side of things, it's not light. It's black and white.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk a bit more about recruitment because I have a friend that is, he's on the other side of it. So he's using recruiters for his firm. And he said there was, sometimes they find difficulty because they have a role and then they'll give that role to the recruiters and the recruiters will train the person that they want to give, want to give the role to,
like
to be perfect for that role. So they'll do the interview with the people from the company and they'll say exactly what they want to say. But when they start, they're having a talent issue because they've been lying in the interviews. So do you find that, is that just like a one-off, or did they're just using a poor recruitment firm, or is that quite a problem in the industry?
What market were they, just for my context, you know?
He's in consulting, so.
Okay. So I don't know, like with us and the market that I focus on, which is executive search across the US, like it's pretty plain and obvious if you're good or not.
Because there's a more experience, maybe it's more experienced hires, you can look and see
exactly
what
that. Like, we do more experienced hires, we don't do that many junior types of hires for our clients, but like, you can definitely prep them, and we do that as well for the client. So, it is a little bit more tailored because some people may have had, you know, four or five jobs throughout their career. A lot of people I'm dealing with are like 45, 50 years old, do you know what I mean? So, they've had different skills, so you can say hone in on that a little bit more. But I would definitely say for us, like, it's just there's rebates and stuff.
Yeah, you guys know.
So like, if you're doing that shit, it's just going to come back and bite you in the ass. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's not going to work, but I think that's just bad recruitment, to be honest.
Yeah. And how do you, obviously now you're in that a job in the city, how are you finding just doing that one football match a week? Do you want to do, are you finding that hard? Because sometimes I know you play a bit of five-a-side sometimes. Yeah. You dabble.
Yeah, I dabble.
But, yeah. How are you finding that?
That was like the big thing for me because I could have stayed out in the US. I could have done an extra year at uni because we were that COVID year where you got given an extra year anyway. So I had the option to do that. I could have done a few trials at different places and gone, the money is shit unless you go to the top league in the US, which I was nowhere near to good enough to do. But you can say you're a pro if you're like the USL. It's like $25,000 a year. And I was just like, I'm not doing that, Jake, just to say I'm a pro from a means to an end point, just to say like, look, I've made it, but I know in my heart I haven't made it. Do you know what I mean? The standard's not what it is in the UK and stuff. So I was just like, right, it's time to bite the bullet. I need to earn as much money as possible. That's all I'm going to focus on. And what's going to kill me is I'm not going to be playing football, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a week. It's going to probably be once or twice, which is it is now. But I'm so lucky with, so I play in this Arthurian League now, which is like all the old boys, private schools, they're in a league and it's so competitive. We play every Saturday. And then there's a team formed of the best players within that league. And then I play for that as well. And we enter like the amateur FA Cup, Interleague Cup. And we won that. It happens every 2 years. And then we went to represent England in Finland playing that. So like I'm still exposed to it, not as frequently, which is obviously shit, but I'm still around. There's a lot of people that are in a similar boat to me where they've played football to a high level, still want to, but with work and stuff, we can't train all the time.
Yeah.
But when we get together, we just give it a real good shot. Do you know what I mean? And like kind of all push each other and get snapped back into that mentality as much as possible. So I get the exposure to it, but I wish I could do it more, but I don't think you can earn good money if you're doing both. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I was surprised that you didn't stay out in the US, like in New York or something, because the recruitment salaries must be potentially...
So it's very, all I work is the US market. We've got an office in Miami.
Yeah, yeah.
I could move to that office tomorrow, like, okay, and do that. And I'd probably get a little bit of an upped base because it's just proportionate where it is here. But at the end of the day, I'm still exposed to the same amount of commission as the people in the US. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is way better than it is in the UK. So I'm already reaping those rewards. But from a base salary standpoint, like I started on what, 25K? And I wasn't even earning commission to begin with. And that was a real punt. And I was like, I'm giving this a minimum a year run at. If I'm not starting to earn good money, reevaluate. Do you know what I mean? And then I've had a few promotions and now, but it's not about the base salary. It's just like the base salary now, it is what it is. I think it's like 40, 45K or something like that. Yeah. But it's all about commission.
Yeah.
That's all I think about.
Yeah, completely. But it's funny to, it's interesting to see that you've now shifted your focus completely to the money side of things, which is, I guess, why people come to the city, right?
Yeah.
You come from wherever. I mean, I don't think you live near London either.
No.
So you come here for one reason, and one reason, all your mates are together.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to earn as much money as possible before you're like 28.
And probably head back up north. That's what.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what you're thinking, the same thing, right?
Yeah.
But the money side of things. Do you feel that when you went to private school, it made you more motivated to almost earn more money because you were around so many people that had successful parents? And that side of things, would you say that influenced you a bit?
It's interesting that. I think most of it comes from my parents, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Like, they are very, very financially driven, particularly dad. And, like, we love, like, the investment side of things, doing all of that together and, you know, being as clever as possible with your money. Like, that's, like, what I love now. It's a little bit of a hobby, do you know what I mean? Like, working out, like, how you can essentially not avoid tax, but like pay less on tax
and
being clever about it. It's fucking brilliant. Like, I love doing that shit now with dad. So it definitely comes mainly from him, if I'm honest, but being around people that, we've been around some people that is just like, they shouldn't have that much money.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, crazy. Some of the money they have is just absolutely obscene. These people that, we know, like, there was a lad in my house that his dad owned Gazprom and he's like a Russian oligarch and I'm talking billions. Like, that amount of money is just like, I don't strive to have that much money. I strive to be completely financially free and be able to do what I want when I want. Like, that is perfect for me. So definitely helped, but I wouldn't say I want to be like that mega, mega, mega rich. Like, if it happens, it happens.
Yeah, it's easy to say now, though.
Oh. But you always want more. You're always on more. Always on more.
You're going to want to get more and more and more.
No, I know, but that type of money is...
I'm talking
hundreds of millions.
Yeah, because I think I was watching a different podcast. They said, to make a million, it's like hard work and grind, right? But then after that, to get into the tens of millions and also the billions mark, it's a bit of, there's luck involved.
You can wind it even back. They say saving your first 100 grand, like actually saving it, not even for a house or anything like that, just to put it away in an ISA, let's say. And then if you save that first 100 grand, you're way closer to it as saving your first million than you were, do you know what I mean? The time that it'll take from 100K to a million is way quicker than that £1 to 100K. That's saving that first 100K and then just letting it be, do you know what I mean? If we have like that sort of money and then in the next, you know, 5-10 years and then we just leave it until we're like 40-50, that's going to be an ISA and you're going to have a million there just saved. Like, that's all I think about is things like that.
I think it's like something like with the S&P 500, at least, say it returns on average like 9 or 10%.
Yeah.
It should double every 7-ish years.
Yeah.
So if you've got 100K in there, give it 25 years, it's going to be a million quid.
Yeah.
So like, you could just, if you chuck something in at 20 years old, 100K, by the time you're 45, you're more than likely to have £1 million in
there. But not many people are like even exposed to that. And I know... a lot, it's expensive living down here. Like, I'm doing it now, do you know what I mean? So like, saving is tough, but like, even saving as much as even if it feels quite minute now, and you're just like, I could probably do with that 500 quid instead of putting it away, or that grand, doing it and then putting it in that ISA, because I don't think they realise that 20 grand that could be tax-free, and people aren't exposed to that. If you're getting as close as possible to maxing that out every single year at the moment, we are going to thank ourselves so much in 20, 25 years. Do you know what I mean? Whereas like most, I know it, most of our mates, like Sharks is the best example. Like he's not aware of that. And then like, he's probably not earning as much enough money to be able to do that, but he could definitely put more away than he is. Do you know what I mean? So like, I always try and teach him and tell him, because you don't realize it now, but every single penny that we save right now, and we could be more frugal with our money. I love it. I love it.
No, yeah. Because I think, I was brought up differently. Like, I wasn't brought up financially minded at all. Like, my mum and dad were just like, let's enjoy it while we've got it.
Yeah.
Like, And to be fair, when you've got two lads that are doing swimming, water polo, you have to drive them, take them to school and all that.
Yeah.
It's so hard to save money and stuff like that. But like, I'm not massively into it. I'm more into the like challenging myself side of things. And actually the financial reward is more like intrinsically motivated for me. Well, like, if I feel like I'm challenging myself as much as possible, that's what makes me happy more than
the
actual reward.
But you're doing that for the financial reward?
No, like it's more like I'll just do random, like really hard sessions, like training sessions, or like learn, like I'm learning Mandarin.
All this
and shit, like all this podcast and stuff. Like,
and put yourself in those.
Like, the odds are we're not going to earn a shit ton of money from this podcast.
Yeah.
But it's a challenge. And that's what I find more fun than the actual financial side of things. But like, it is interesting. And the ISA thing is like, before I actually went out and had a proper look for it, I had no clue about ISAs. And I think like most people are the same. Like they
the
don't
fact
know.
That school don't teach you that shit is absolute joke. Do you know what I mean? And it probably, I would have been way more engaged in school if I was hearing stuff about money. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if there's definitely a balance, by the way, and I totally agree with what you're saying. And like, I'm all for kind of creating memories, and there's definitely a fine line where you can literally just be so money, money, money driven. And I have a laugh as well.
Yeah.
Like I'm not all that, but I do love it. Like I just, I know it's a little bit of a hobby and I love trying to do that. But the fact that school don't teach shit like that, I think is, and we've all heard it all before, but like, why not have a lesson
or
you know what, something that is just to do with like how to make yourself, set yourself up financially in the best way possible. Like, I wouldn't have heard of an ISA if it wasn't for dad, do you know what I mean? And then maybe doing a little bit of a wealth management internship for a bit. Like, you just don't get exposed to it. So the amount of people that could be doing that sort of stuff from school, and there's junior ISAs and stuff. Like, we could have been doing stuff like that for school when we had like, you know, I've literally missed that all when I was a kid. And if I had a summer job, I could have been putting 100 quid away on that, and it's completely tax-free.
Yeah.
But I wasn't aware of it. So I think school should definitely do it.
Yeah, I agree. So just back to sport for a bit, because I just want to touch on the difference between soccer and football.
Yeah.
When you're in America and when you're in the UK.
Yeah.
Do you think the difference in standard mainly comes from kind of that grassroots? It's so ingrained in UK culture, football. Do you think it's mainly from that, that they don't have that like depth at the bottom level? Because I'm assuming it's all in basketball and
it's a different sport.
Like American football.
It's a different sport. The college soccer compared to footy in the UK is a different sport. Like, it's roll on, roll off subs, which already makes it a different game. Do you know what I mean? It's a bit like basketball. Yeah. Honestly, the game is 1,000 miles an hour, and it really threw me. Whereas, you know, in the UK, we've all been playing football. Like, you lads know, even you, I wouldn't call you guys footy players, don't get me wrong, but
hey, come on, hey. Hey, also, I broke my finger playing for your team, mate.
As well. But like, you know the shit of like, when you're winning a game and like, you may be in a very, very big game and you would just do a little bit of like time management, take the ball to the corner. If someone's
the
down,
keeper, they may, the keeper jumping that on it.
The US lads, not that, just straight back in. Like, we're 1-0 up with 5 minutes to go and they're just still going for it. Do you know what I mean? I think, whereas like, we're just exposed to so much, it's just a different animal there in the US. So you have to be so fit. Like, it was the fittest I've ever been. The heat as well was a joke, but it's just a different game. It's like back and forth basketball, whereas the UK, you have that tactical side where the first 10 minutes of a game is always frantic. Do you know what I mean? Everyone's getting to know. And then you may have a team that sit off for a little bit and do that, whereas it's just an absolute car crash. Sometimes the games, it's just 1,000 miles an hour. You then come off for 10 minutes, get your breather, and then you're straight back on. Like, in the UK, once you're off, you're off. Do you know what I mean? That's it. You're on as much as possible.
In your team, though, wasn't it a lot? I presume it was a lot of international players like yourself that in those teams, because like the America, obviously it's very appealing to go out to America.
Yeah.
It's a great time, I'm sure it is. So was your team mainly made up of European players?
No, we were quite heavy. So our squad is it was like 32 players. So I'd say like 10 or 12 don't really play at all. And then you've got 20 that are competing, but there may be like within that two or three young lads that know they'll play a bit and not much. And then of that, I think we had at the height, probably 6 or 7 UK lads. I think one lad from Iceland as well. That was it. Of our team, so that's still quite a lot, and I'd say most of the UK lads were playing as well, so like you have that, but it's just still, you can't put your stamp on a game that much because there's other US lads involved, and the other team have got a lot of US lads involved as well. But every team's different. Some of them were really US heavy, some of them had a lot of kind of African lads that came across as well. Like, it was everyone there, to be fair.
Yeah, because Yeah, because did you ever play like the Ivy schools or anything like
did
that?
Did I play any Ivy League schools?
Because they play in their own league, right? Obviously, the Ivy League.
Because you can't get a sports scholarship to an Ivy League, you know?
Yeah,
that?
It's crazy. Mental. Yeah, can you only get academic? Can you even get academic?
Yeah, you can get academic, that's it.
Yeah, but they say you can't have sports scholarships, but like...
I know.
You know, they're giving away academic scholarships to people that got like three C's.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Because they do so well still. But I don't think I actually played any of the Ivy League schools when I was out there. I can't remember. I definitely didn't play against, you know, Princeton and all that. Yeah. We might... That team that I was on about that I play for now, the league team, it's not confirmed yet, but next summer we're going to be going out and doing Anglo-Saxon Cup, and we're playing Princeton and a few others. It'll be really good.
Call up
yeah, backup goalie.
I mean, I was going to ask something, but I forgot.
Why did that one out? So, obviously, your brother's playing football as well now.
Yeah.
Where's he at with all that stuff? Because I know he was playing for what? But
yeah, Max was at Burn. He got the scholarship. He didn't get a pro, and he didn't want to get. He had two offers in the US to go, very similar to myself, probably about this close to going, and then decided not to go, did an apprenticeship, so didn't even go to university, and he's been working since he was 18 now.
Oh, he has, yeah. Is he just trading or something?
Tech sales. Yeah, so he's fully qualified sales exec, they've paid for all, and now he's actually doing a degree on the side, that they're paid for as well, so he always seems to land on his feet, but he does play semi-pro, he gets 150 quid a game. Yeah, plays for a local side.
It's a bit of money.
He plays twice a week sometimes. Do you know what I mean? It's 300 quid. And it's literally just in a little brown envelope, tax free. Do you know what I mean? It's class. He loves it.
Yeah. So my brother went out to the US last year. He's just done his freshman year.
Nice.
But there's a problem out there with a lot of dropouts.
Mate.
Like, I was, when he went to Kaiser University. And I kind of did a bit of my research before. I was like, you know, like 42% people drop out. I was like, what? Like that's unheard of in the UK. Like you get through your degree, whatever goes on. So did you find that was the same at Furman, that people just drop out either, I suppose at Ivy League, you get the Ivy League dropouts because they start a startup. But in the other, the financial burden, we talked about it a bit, must be a lot and cause a lot of people to drop out if they weren't interested in the sport anymore.
Yeah, I was in a huge, huge bubble at Furman in the sense of it's just the football, the soccer team.
Because
that's 32 lads. That's a lot of relationships to be doing. Do you know what I mean? You're training every day together. You eat together. You do everything together. So I didn't actually like make that many friends outside of my team just because like, I didn't have time. Do you know what I mean? And none of us did. So like that was like our frat, if you want to call it. Do you know what I mean? No one joined a frat or did anything because we did everything together. But like I'd say it was quite common for a new lad to start probably once a year at least, and then be gone within like six or 7 weeks. Yeah, and just like leave, or just do one semester and then fuck off. And it was just like, where did he go? And he was like, didn't work out for him. Do you know what I mean? So like, and that was just in my team. Do you know what I mean? So I can imagine like the football teams that's like 150 lads, that's always happening and people are just coming and going, but it's a lot of money. Do you know what I mean? To do that.
Because you said about 12 people don't really play.
Yeah.
So they must be a bit like, surely I could transfer to another uni or
you get that.
Wherever.
You get that, but like, a lot of lads, like, rewind for what I said, like, going to university is the pinnacle of your, like, your life, To be on a Div 1 soccer team, you're getting all the kit, you're getting all... Everyone's treated the exact same, no matter what. We all do the same training. They are just happy to be there. And it's not like that they're not trying to push and try and get the chance to play a game. And some of the lads, like, play once throughout their whole career and, like, an official game. Yeah. And it may be one where, like, 6-7-0 up or senior night, where like you just get chucked on in your final game, but like they're happy to be there. That's why the squads can be that big. Do you know what I mean? It's not like there's a few lads that are like, gaffer, I need to be playing. Like what's going on and causing a tantrum. But a lot of these lads are like, that's their status. I'm a Div 1 soccer player. Do you know what I mean? That's it. And it's like, obviously it's harder for us to comprehend because I think we've all been quite elite in the sense of I was thinking from freshman year, I want to start, I want to play. Do you know what I mean?
Did you just start straight in the first team?
Because
my brother starts, normally it's a bit unheard of for a freshman to go into the first basketball team, especially if you're from the UK, right? So you started in the second team.
So I actually was quite lucky because I went COVID year. The season runs from September to end of November, December.
Yep.
That's all the soccer season is. it got flipped for the first year. So that first semester, the season didn't happen because of COVID. So it happened in January. So I managed to like, it helped me because we were like playing as an inter squad with masks on and all this stuff. And I was just getting acclimatized to the way of football. Yeah. And I did really, really well. Yeah. But I don't think I would have started if the season started in September. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, you almost would have missed the season.
Yeah. So it then started in January. It was the first time it's ever been done and ran from January to March, or whatever. And I played, I got freshman of the year. In the whole conference.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. Congrats on that.
Yeah, in the whole conference. But I don't think I would have done that if I'd literally been there 4 weeks, done pre-season, the season started, whereas the gaffer trusted me because he saw me play for like four or five months, you know what I mean? So I was quite lucky in that sense, but it's not like super common for loads of freshmen to hit, but there's always, I'd say, like one or two that make a dent on the squad.
Yeah. Obviously, we've seen like some of the big unis in football, not soccer.
Yeah.
And the crowds are just unreal. Oh. You know, when they come out to Metallica.
Mate,
was it like that? You had a big crowd.
In my third year, I did my my first ever injury. I tore all my ligaments on my ankle. Like it basically was, they couldn't believe I hadn't dislocated my ankle because my whole foot went round, and it ruined me, to be honest. Ruined me. And we were, anyway, the story is I was in a boot and we went to a Clemson football game. Oh my word. Clemson University.
Right, this is one of the big ones.
Huge, huge. Yeah. Like one of the best for soccer, but unbelievable for football as well. The stadium holds over 100,000 people. We were all there.
It's bigger than the Derby Stadium.
Derby Stadium is like 30K.
Mate, over 100,000 people. It's like a bowl, yeah? It's like, honestly, like the San Siro on steroids. So we were there at the top thing and I was like, mate, I can't really see much. So I was like, to the lads, so it was one of these weekends where we were completely off and the gaffer had just given us a free weekend. We probably got two a semester.
He was just like,
look, there's no game. I don't want to train. You have the weekend off. So we were all having a few beers because I didn't really drink when I was out there. It was just like, there wasn't much going on where I was from.
You were allowed to drink. Were you 20? Was it 21?
It was 21. You can get away with a little bit. But I think I was probably 21 at this time anyway.
Yeah.
And then I thought, I'm not watching it from up here all the way. I mean, we're in the gods, yeah? I was like, lads, let's just go and find out how to get this, like this grass bit next to the pitch.
I was like,
let's find out how to get in there. I saw a wheelchair and I was like, get me in that wheelchair. So I was there with my ankle, and then we were skipping the queue to this priority pass thing. And then I was like, mate, I can't get up there. I'm in a wheelchair. I need to be side of the pitch and I need my friends to be with me. So we've had a few beers. They wheel me down with all my mates, front row seats, this Clemson game. We're all how has this happened? The game then ends. Security are like wanting to take the disabled people out first or anyone in a wheelchair. I go, it's all right, mate. I just walk just off. And he goes, you what, you cheeky fucker. All my mates are laughing. It was absolutely brilliant. It was such
so a... It was just you and one other guy or something?
No, so I literally was with like my team and I was like, we're on a team together. I cannot get up there.
Yeah.
And they were like, these lads didn't know what to say. And like, in America, no one really pushes the limits. Do you know what I mean? I was looking at me. So,
in the UK football game, people would take the rip with that.
So they're moving out and then literally I'm just there like this. And then all my mates come with me and then we're sat on this bank for like the last quarter of the game. The game's fucking ages, isn't it?
So yeah.
I got bored up there basically. I was like, let's do something. And then they came to get us. They was like, look, it's about to end. Are you okay? I was like, I just want to watch the end. I was like, actually, just leave it. And walked up. He goes, what? You cheeky fucker. Walk off. And I just walk off in my boot. Like, it's so good. But games are mental. Like, it's a whole show. You're there for 4 or 5 hours. And
yeah, they have half-time shows.
Oh, the lot, mate. The lot. The money they make is crazy.
Yeah, and it's like the whole town, isn't it? It's not like they have their... I think the college football games like bigger than the actual NFL games. Like
a lot of the time
have,
is.
They'll have their whole like this whole town or this whole city, and like, basically everyone just swarms to that football game.
Like they love college like football more than NFL.
Have you seen that?
Patriotic,
isn't it?
Yeah, that LSU. Like, have you seen the LSU stadium?
Mate, I've seen
like,
it. Yeah,
rammed with people. It's like mental.
They're all in the kit, so like they're biting.
It's just purple and yellow everywhere.
You don't get that in Loughborough, do you?
What, Durham Torpids? What's that? Where you're rowing down the river? People. Yeah, I know.
But honestly, it's a way of life. College and university in America is a way of life. Like, this stadium was just orange because Clemson's orange school, and oh my word, like everyone's just kitted out hats a lot. They live for it, absolutely live for it, and that's their team. Do you know what I mean? Like, we would have a football team, a Stoke team, that's their team. They absolutely live and die by it. So they're buzzing.
So
but it's college. Like, no one's officially getting paid to play.
Yeah.
There's all this NIL stuff now where, like...
I'm assuming, like, for a lot of them, it's do they have to go through college to get into the NFL?
You have to. That's why...
It's a difference between the UK as well.
That's why the system's in place. Like, every sport, like, 90% of people have gone through the college system in any sport to then go pro. Like, swimmers, basketballers, footballers, soccer players. And that's why that's in place still, because you get that exposure to elite level sport, and then you go... Some people do a year or two and they're that good. Do you know what I mean? Where it's just like... This person actually could probably finish their degree on the side and fast track them, get them in. And then there's the odd one that is just exceptional at like 16, 17, 18. It's almost like, let's give pro a shot for a year. If it doesn't work, you can still then go to uni. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. So I'm kind of interested in the process to get from the UK to America.
Yeah.
The recruitment process, in that, is it not that you have to upload videos and send them off to the schools that you want to go to?
Yeah.
Or did you use like an agency to help?
So mum was really, really good with helping with this, because obviously I've got a lot of stuff going on with A-levels. I'm still playing football all the time. And we got an agent in the end, and I think we paid them like 500 quid up front. There's so many dodgy ones out here as well, so you've got to be careful about it. I think we paid 500 quid up front, and he just helped with all the video and stuff. And then it was like, Dad worked it out, because they wanted a lot more up front, and it was like on completion, basically. It was like commission for him. If you place me and get me somewhere, we'll then pay you the other. I actually don't know the number, and I'm maybe completely off, but I think it's like a grand and a half, 2K or something like that.
It is around that.
Something like that. But then the story I told you earlier, the coach flew over, nothing to do with an agent, and was like, I want you. So I was like, so we ended up just losing the 500 quid, I think, of that. But I was sending my... videos off through him to other colleges and was having conversations and stuff, but I ended up just doing it myself because of that thing, a team that I was playing for. So I think for the advice now, there's so many of these agents, but you just be careful. And I think having someone that's done it or been through them is really important, because there's these dodgy ones out there. I've heard some bad stories.
Yeah. So the value they provide, these agents, is basically just contacts.
Their network.
Contacts to the coaches.
Mate, basically, like me calling my coach up now is in a very, very small instance. You want to go to America, you've got a clips. I then send the video to my coach. I'm like, I'm working with Trey. Do you want to speak to him? This would cost you X. Do you get what I'm saying? And they often have relationships with, I'd say, like 25, 30, and then there's like different ones. But that's, you're just immediate. It's basically recruitment.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I'm assuming if you were persistent enough, you could probably do it yourself if you just hound unis and stuff, but I'm assuming that it'll probably just go down in their email list. Whereas if you're a recruiter and you've got that direct access to coaches, they'll actually look at the stuff that you...
A lot of them have played out there and maybe coached out there for a bit as well. So you just know a load of them. So they're a little bit like trusted. And there's a big agency that a lot of my mates used and Max was using called Vertex, that basically the lads don't pay because they were all in academies. It's often the ones that didn't go pro. So their quality, very, very close. And the unis just pay the guys from Vertex to get the best people. So these lads that have no money, like with the private school ones, they wanted money off us. Do you get what I'm saying? They're like, oh, you're in private school, you're doing all right. Whereas these lads from like academies, it looks good for them if they're getting placed by that person. So then the uni just pays the agent to get access from those academy lads. So that's why it's actually very, very good. And a lot of the ex-academy lads, one of my best mates from uni, Josh Hosey, he was at Everton and then didn't get a pro, was a scholar there, and they placed him at Furman. So, and it was literally just done by that. So they want to pay for that type of player because they get exposure to the best, you know, the academy lads that didn't quite make it at like some of these Premier League clubs. And then these lads get the opportunity, which is amazing. They would have not even thought about doing it. So like literally they find out they don't get the contract, and then they have like a load of these trial games to maybe get a few of the clubs in the UK. And then they have these talks about America, and they're like, yeah, go on then, put my name down. Here's my clips. See what comes back. And then it goes from there.
Right. So Jay, we always ask the same question at the end of a podcast. And I don't know if you've seen some of our other pods. We normally do your hardest session ever. So what is your hardest session? And then we're going to go and give it a go on a separate video.
So our...
Whether it's fitness or football based.
Okay. So our pre-season test every year is called the Cooper test.
Right, here we go. I'm loving this already.
Fucking hell. Fucking hell. And just imagine you're going back now in August in South Carolina. It's 38 degrees. Do you know what I mean? You have to do 2 miles in under 12 minutes.
Okay, is that doable? What
and
pace
then,
is that?
And then...
Wait.
Yeah.
2 miles.
That's
3.2K.
6 minute pace.
3.2K, 12 minutes.
That's below 4 minute pace.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, right, you're
it's
in,
a sprint.
You're
it's
in
sprint.
Ks, aren't you? I always do the miles. Yeah. So you have to do 2 miles in under...
12 minutes.
Yeah. So that's 8 laps of the track. And then you had 5 minute break. And you have to do one more mile in under 5:45.
Okay, right.
So 17.
That's a good one. That's
17:45. Cooper test, it's called. So you have a 5 minute break after the first 2 miles. Then you have to do 4 more laps. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Brutal.
People are literally throwing up, being sick.
I think
Ross running around. We did that every single summer. The first thing we did before kicking a ball was that around the track. And I've been
that's
training
so
all
good.
Summer.
We can do that as well. That's...
Mate, it's a really, really good test. It's that 5 minute break actually does help and you can really push yourself for that 5 foot. But mate, it's a quick pace. It's a quick pace.
Because because a mile's about 1.65-ish K. So 2 is 3.3 in 12 minutes.
It's just under 5K and all in. I think it's like just over four maybe.
So that is, I'm guessing around a 350, 345.
You know, he's rapid as well. We're not that rapid.
I'm not rapid.
You think I'm not rapid, mate?
Yeah, but you're more rapid. You're way more rapid than me.
You asked for the hardest session. Every single summer, mate, I felt sick when it was like coming up. We had to do a post our times at the, because we'd leave about May, I think, and then be back for August. So end of May, end of June, end of July, we have to just put our times in the chat.
Oh, yeah.
And you're just thinking, oh my God. And there's some of these lads that are running like 11:10 and I'm maybe putting like 12:10, just as like you're showing the gaffer, you're getting better. Yeah. But I'm like 13:10. I'm like, fucking hell, I'm going to be miles off. But then when you're that, I will give it, when you're in with all your teams doing it, it pushes you more. Do you get what I'm saying? So that definitely gives you an extra 30 seconds or so. But mate, it was brutal. Like your ears are popping in the heat as well. Like you're being sick.
And the heat.
Like, oh, the heat. We had to do it at like 6 a.m., but it was still like.
How hot was that, you reckon?
Oh, mate, 30. It would still be 30s. But like,
so did you do it on the track?
We did it on a track. Yeah. We did it on a track. But like, obviously, when I was home, I would just do
it's
it.
It's even worse than I think on a track.
Mate, I'm hugging that line. Do you know what I mean? literally. But that, mate, that was tough. So they've literally just done it, the lads, when they went back the other day. But if you don't pass, you have to come back the next morning, go again, and basically do it until you passed.
Okay.
Goalies were doing it as well, lads. Some of the goalies and these lads were.
Maybe I should do it then. You know.
It's a tough set.
Yeah, 100%. We'll give it a go and we'll let you know how it goes. But yeah, well, thank you very much, Jake, for being on.
Pleasure, lads. Loved it. Loved it. Love it.
It's been good to speak to you. And maybe in the future we'll get you on again. But great. And keep an eye on the pod. You know,
I will do.
You'll be on there.
Share the pod. Pass the pod.
Yeah. Right. Brilliant.
Cheers, lads.
No joke.